You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby G and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer with Jim and Bobby Bell,
where readers and writers meet, and story is
everything.
Hey, Jim, we have some fancy glasses out here.
Yeah, that's just up for them too.
What are these glasses for?
This is to celebrate the hundredth show. Boom!
And to all of you for being with us, riding along for one or all 100 shows, we toast you. And we also want to acknowledge a few other people that have been along for the ride. Thank you to Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band, who just opened tonight's show and always close it. Who else do we want to make sure we thank, honey?
We have a bunch of people here. We have a guest host we need to acknowledge.
Yes.
Here. We have Gentry Brown, Peggy Chambers, Tom Swearingen, and Henry Park. And each one of these folks is introduced as some sort of author or book or talk
and has,
on the show.
Yeah, and has been with us regularly. We also want to toast to Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, who have come alongside of us, and they created a new logo and all the social media, beautiful graphics that you see and videos and things. That is all courtesy of Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And of course,
and Sam
Hassan, LA Talk Radio. Thank you, Sam, for being with us every week. And we also want to thank all 100 authors, including tonight's author, Kevin Wolf, for being with us. And here he is. Hi, Kevin.
Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, I'm really excited to be here for the 100th show. It's beyond, honored is probably not a good enough word to use for this. And thank you, people. I mean, those of us who write books and try to put them out for people, there's so many good books, so many good authors out there. You know, we just struggle to help find a way to get our book found. And this is just a wonderful avenue to help with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we understand. We thank you. We just lost you for just a moment there, Kevin. But thank you for acknowledging that. That's our hearts. That's why we do this, is to support all of you that have the creative spirit. And we know you all need platforms, authors, singers, songwriters, poets, journalists, columnists. We know that you need a platform, and we're so delighted that we're able to do it. And it's so much fun. Let's see. Do you want to? And Kevin tonight is our author and our featured guest. We're going to be talking about his riveting mystery, Trail Ridge, a Guy Hogan mystery. And Jim, do you have a little something you want to say about Kevin?
We do. We have a little bio here. Kevin Wolf is a great-grandson of Colorado homesteaders. He enjoys fly fishing, old Winchesters, and almost every 1950s Western movie. He lives in Estes Park, Colorado, with his loving and patient wife. An award-winning mystery and Western author, Kevin has won a Tony Hillerman Award and also a Spur Award from Western Writers of America. Tonight, we'll be taking an in-depth look at his latest book, Trail Ridge, A Guy Hogan Mystery. Welcome.
Kevin, is there anything that you would like to share that we've neglected to cover in your bio?
That's a good snapshot. Of course, I'm more than just that. But that's a good place to start. I've you know, I've been writing some time. Trail Ridge is about the fifth, I think it's the sixth novel I've published. And and this one's, it's got a special part in my heart because it was, Guy Hogan was one of the first, when I decided to be a writer, my first book was going to be a, Guy Hogan was the first character I wrote about. Now that first book needed a lot of work. It wasn't quite what it should be. I know I read it several times and it got pushed back kind of onto the side. But then every so often I'd pull out that Guy Hogan story and play with it and write a little bit. And just in the last year, I'm living here in Estes Park now where the story takes place, and in Rocky Mountain National Parks, like I said, is right out my back window. And I just said, I got to do something with this book. And so I over the last about 8 months, I put it together. And I got it to a place where I thought it was the story I wanted to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you start? How long a process has it been for your first book here?
I was the kind of guy in high school and junior high when the English teacher assigned a paper and everybody moaned. I went, okay. I didn't ask for the assignment, but I was never scared of writing. I had a couple of feeble attempts to write stuff, but life got in the way. I was working and had a small family. But I can actually tell you that I was after 9/11, and remember those early days, I was traveling sales guy. I was, on the road 2 or 3 weeks a month. And remember how they didn't know how to run the airports, and we didn't know whether we'd be in the security line for 15 minutes or an hour and a half.
That's right.
Yeah, I finished a business trip in Detroit, Michigan. The guy I was working with dropped me at the airport for a flight home, and in 15 minutes I was through security, sitting there, and my flight didn't leave for another couple hours. I just finished a very forgettable paperback that was in my briefcase. I went to the bookstore to try to pick up something, and didn't see anything that interested me, went back, opened my laptop and said to myself, I think I could write a book. And right there in the terminal in Detroit, I typed out the first 8 or 10 pages of what was going to be the next great American novel. It's that's still hidden someplace on my laptop.
That's a great story.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
You won a Tony Hillerman Award. You want to talk a little bit about that writing that won you that award?
Yeah. The quick story would be that as I tried to learn what a writer should do, I joined Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, which is a organization here in Colorado for multi-genre writers, got involved in some critique groups, took some adult education classes, and was writing books. And I was fortunate enough that one of the manuscripts I did was picked up by an agent. And while she was trying to sell that, I started working on this other story that's The Home Place. And my agent said, "Hey, I see this Tony Hillerman contest. This is right what your book is, right in the what they're looking for." And at that time, the Hillerman contest had to be mysteries set someplace in the Southwest, and they defined the Southwest at that time as the Four Corner States, Nevada, California, if it didn't touch the ocean, and it had to be a mystery. Well, my story was set in a small farming town in Colorado, kind of modeled after the place that my family homesteaded. And I one day we entered into a contest. I didn't think anything about it. And then Monday morning, I was actually on business in Salt Lake City. I get a call from Macmillan Press, who did the final judging on the entries, and to tell me that I'd won the contest, and then Ann Hillerman called me sometime that week. I was invited down to the Hillerman contest in Santa Fe, and the award for the book was the publishing contract with Macmillan.
Wow.
That's great.
When you answered the phone, did you think that it was, you know, they were not really, you know, that who they said they would?
A prank call?
Actually, what I thought, well, I didn't think I'd won the contest. What I thought was that maybe they were some interested in my manuscript and they we'd want to talk more. But then he said, hey, right. No, you're the winner. And
how fun.
And then I had to keep, and that was in September, and I had to keep it quiet till November when they had the conference. Though we started doing some preliminary work on the manuscript and some stuff. But I had to keep it quiet for 2 months. I did tell my wife.
And you, like we are members of Western Writers of America, and you won a prestigious Spur Award for another. Yes, tell us about that.
It was Best Short Fiction in 2021. And that was a story called Belt Hanger. Belt Hanger is set in like the early 1950s, and again, on a little farming town on the plains of Colorado. And it's told through the eyes of Belt Hanger. Belt Hanger's father owns the auto parts store in town.
Oh.
And Belt Hanger's, and his job was hanging up the fan belts and hoses, you know, how they used to display them on the walls around the store. And what's happened is that there's been a bank robbery, and the bank robber, they know that the bank robber is headed towards this little town, and Belt Hanger has been put in the second floor of his father's parts store. He's been given his deer rifle, and there's the only stoplight between in town is right outside there, and they think that if they can't get the bad guy stopped, he might have to pause a moment at the at that stoplight. And it's up to the sheriff whether he'll let Belt Hanger take a shot. And Belt Hanger wins all the turkey shoots, gets his deer every year. And he's kind of a little bit of a different kid. And so you see as he looks out the window, he tells a story about what's about to happen to him.
Wow. Wow. Mm. Well, we'd love to read those, wouldn't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, let's see. I'm going to hold up the book again. And Jim, I know you have a question about tonight's book.
Well, as we get into this, let's talk about the cover a little bit. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, definitely, you know, the story is set in Rocky Mountain National Park. Now, the other thing I should tell you, it's set in 19, the story happens in 1982. But, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park is known for its alpine beauty, the mountains and the canyons and the river and the wildlife. And so that had to be the backdrop. And then, of course, there's the guy standing there with his cowboy hat on looking down into the valleys. And there's that bull elk standing down there. And he's all by himself because Guy Hogan, the protagonist in the book, is going through a tough time in his life. And he's kind of all by himself.
Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with Guy Hogan? Because he was around in that first book. So
the name, I don't remember. I think the names, a lot of times when I'm working on a story, if I can't think of good names, I watch a college football game and look for the names on the back of jerseys, see if there's something that's attractive. I don't remember where the name came from, but Guy Hogan, as the readers learn in this book, he and his wife had planned to kind of escape to these mountains. They had a home that was going to be built and it was going to be their getaway. And cancer takes his wife from him. So Hogan finds himself now alone in this house he was going to share with his wife. And and his refuge becomes his fly rod. And he sneaks out to fish almost every day, hoping that, you know, in the beauty around him and the cast of that fly rod, he'll chase away the loneliness. And when the story opens, his life is pretty empty.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with our featured guest tonight, Show 100, with Kevin Wolf. And as we've just been discussing, Trail Ridge, a Guy Hogan mystery. Stay right where you are. We're going to just take a short break and let you see one of the places that Kevin's book is available, and that is our Rendezvous with a Writer featured a book list on our Out West Shop affiliate page to bookshop.org. Stay tuned. When we come back, Kevin's going to read a passage for us. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest tonight, Kevin Wolf. We're just discussing his book, Trail Bridge, and I think he's going to read a little bit.
I'd like to just share, actually, the very opening scene of the book. Other fishermen thought this stretch of water was too close to the road. More and bigger fish could be found in the streams and lakes farther into the park, but the one fish I couldn't catch waited in the pool just ahead. Where the white riffles swept over the gravelly bottom, the surface of the stream turned slick and smooth. In a pool shaded by the cut bank, each ivory-colored speckle along my trout's sides shimmered. I slipped to my knees behind a fringe of weeds, and careful to keep my shadow off the water, I swung a four-weight fly rod back over my shoulder, picked the right ripple to place the caddis fly, and arched the rod forward. A car door slammed. Across the stream, not 20 yards from where I hid, a woman quick-stepped down the rocky bank from the roadway. Blonde hair fanned over her tan shoulders, and a tissue fluttered from one of her outstretched hands. I glanced away to check my cast. The fly settled on the water, caught the current, and glided into my fish's pool. The woman stopped in the shade of the trees just across the stream. Her back was to me. She peered around both sides of a clump of aspens that shielded her from the road, hooked her thumbs into the waistband of her jeans, and wriggled them down. I didn't know if I should speak. At least I should move or rustle the willow branches to warn her I was there, but the tip of my fly rod quivered, the line grew taut, and the trout I tried so many times to hook splashed to the surface. A noise, more surprise than a scream, came from the woman. I raised one hand to the side of my face to shield my eyes and let the woman know I wasn't looking. At that second, the rod bent, line hissed from the reel, my trout sliced upstream through the swift water, and I pulled up on the rod to fight the fish. No! Her sound became a word, and a silver flash cut the water at the end of my line. The trout dove for the dark water at the next curve of the stream, and just as suddenly, the line went slack. I turned to the woman and shrugged. One of her hands gathered her pants together at her narrow waist. The other pointed upstream. Strands of hair whipped by the wind caught in her open mouth, and her eyes opened wide. I was fishing. You didn't see me. I didn't mean to. No, she wailed and pointed at a spot upstream where the trout had freed itself. I climbed to my feet. Where a deep stretch of water curved, a squat willow spread its branches out over the stream. A pair of pale-colored aspen logs bobbed side by side in the current. Something seemed unnatural, not right. I stepped forward. One log shifted, and the end of the log, pale and white, broke the surface. The fly rod dropped from my hands. The logs were legs, a person's legs. Someone had fallen into the stream. Get help, I called, splashed into the moving water. Woman dashed to the roadway and waved her arms at a passing car. Body floated face down. Face and head had caught in the bush's branches, and I wrapped my arms around its waist and heaved with all my strength. The dead weight forced me to my knees, and water filled my hip boots, and I lunged forward, pushing the body up onto the bank, and I scrambled up beside it and rolled it over, ready to force air into the lifeless lungs. Tentacles of wet hair clung to the man's forehead. Pale purple-ish lips refused to move, and eyes that had been blue now were glazed with a thick, sticky film. A chill colder than the icy water coursed down my back. I looked up. The woman from the car pressed both hands to her mouth. She stared at me for some hope. All I could do was shake my head.
All right. So it begins. Trail Ridge, a Cuyahoga mystery. And I, as a reader, you got me from that very first sentence, and I just kept flipping those pages, Kevin. I think you felt the same way.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a great book.
Yeah, and we, you know, we do chat as we're reading, but we had to be very careful with spoiler alerts. He'd say, oh, don't tell me. I didn't get there yet, you know. Or
that's true. And a lot of things here in the book can be spoiler alerts. So we have to be careful. I have to be careful with the questions we ask.
So,
you know, well, okay. Yeah, what was the inspiration for the story?
One thing I wanted to share the beauty and beyond the beauty, kind of the feeling of the national park and what's going on here. So, you know, I tried very hard to be real in the descriptions of the nature, the wildlife, the things that they encounter. Guy Hogan, this character, this lonely man, in a real way, I'll be honest, my wife and I just celebrated our 50th anniversary.
Oh, well. Congratulations.
Yeah, August 10th was 50 years. And, you know, I love her very much. And I tried to put me in a place. If she wasn't here, what would I be? And that's, you know, that's part of the challenge for Guy Hogan. And then, of course, the other part is I just wanted to write a Rip Snorton, story, because we got car chases and we got some gunshots that come out of nowhere, and we got some good guys and we got some bad guys, and we got a lot of people we're not real sure which side
which they are. Yeah,
that's true.
They may switch sides.
Now, when you were reading the very beginning there, we hear that is Guy Hogan's. It's written in his point of view, from his point of view, but the point of view changes as the book goes about, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I really like Guy Hogan. He'd be a good friend of mine. Yeah. And so I wanted the intimacy of telling it through his point of view. So it's the Guy Hogan sections are in first person. Then when we flip in a mystery, you want to have stuff that your protagonist doesn't know. So to tell us, to carry that part of the story, other characters are told in third person. And I think it works well. I think I don't think the reader has to try real hard to shift between those two points of view.
Yeah. I know you want to ask about that car.
before we get to the car, Trail Ridge. What is Trail Ridge?
Yeah.
It's a special road, right?
Trail Ridge, Rocky Mountain National Park sits on the mountain range that runs through Rocky Mountain National Park. Is the Continental Divide. That water, it separates the watershed from that goes west into the Colorado River and on to California. And on the east side, water that comes out of the park goes into the rivers and eventually would find its way to the Mississippi and the Atlantic. So it's really, you know, high. We got these high mountain areas, and Trail Ridge is a road, and it's one of the highlights of the park. And it leads from Estes Park over to Grand Lake on the other side, and elevation wise, here in Estes Park we're about 7,000 feet, but at the peak of Trail Ridge Road, it's about 12,000 feet.
Oh,
it's above timberline. There's no trees. Yeah. It's alpine tundra. Then it drops off on the west side down into the headwaters of the Colorado River. Trail Ridge was originally the Ute Indians would use this trail to cross from the mountains on the west over to the east side when they buffalo hunt in the summers. And, when the Rocky Mountain National Park became a national park in 1915, the Trail Ridge was a kind of a dirt road, and during the 1930s, under Roosevelt and the civilian conservation corps and the Make Work projects, that's when they dedicated the road and paved it. And it's still a two-lane road, and it's a spectacular trip.
Mm-hmm. Now you said you want to ask?
No, no.
You said this in 1982. And over just a few days in 82, what happened in 1982 that caught your attention?
Okay, yeah. In 1982, there was a, it's it's the Lawn Lake flood. There was a small earthen dam that was constructed in the late 1800s. It's inside the national park, and it was originally a retention for some water that went to farmers on the Eastern Plains. And that it was an ill repair just because it was kind of ignored. And on a July day in 1982, it's a bluebird day, not a cloud in the sky, the dam failed. And this wall of water rushes down a mountainside into the rivers in the park and eventually finds its way right down the main street of Estes Park. You can, even today, when you come into Rocky Mountain National Park, you can see the scars on the mountainside where left still left by the flood and the boulders that were carried from high on the mountain slope down into the valleys. And the old timers here in Estes Park said there was a mixed blessing. Yeah, they had a flood, but it also tore down a lot. It flooded and broke up a lot of old, crappy little old motels that had been there for years, and they were replaced by some new places. So,
new places.
Yeah.
Well, I think very few lives were lost, you know, which is kind of amazing to me. I think.
Yeah, the thing was that because of the remoteness of where this lake was, there was a man that had taken out a backcountry permit and was actually camping at the dam, and he was killed right away. They found that out days later. As the flood came down, it actually filled up kind of a basin, and as that filled, then it sloshed over and started down the hill. So they had some advance warning. There was actually a contractor was picking up trash in the park and saw the flood happen and got down and warned a campground. So they evacuated the campground, and the fatalities were some men went back into the campground after they were told to leave to get their sleeping bags and different stuff and got caught in the wall of water.
Yeah.
So that parts of the story is true. And I added a couple of other little tidbits.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, you tied it in. Yeah. You know, the theme, one of the main themes here in the story is poaching of elk antlers. Did you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, that's it's a one of the things that people come to see here in Estes Park is the herds of elk, and they're magnificent animals. In fact, when you look out my back window of my office, I look at a little green belt and then the city golf course. And just today, there was a herd of about 16 cow elk and one big bull elk out there.
Wow!
Just pacing around. And if you know anything about elk, they shed their antlers every winter, and then the new antler growth starts. And it's even these big antlers that big bulls that might be, you know, 4 or 5 foot long with 7 or 8 points, or, you know, six or seven points on them, regrow every year. And as they grow in the spring, they start out as these almost look like a mushroom nub that's covered with this velvety stuff. And then it's very vascular. That's the blood flow. And then through the course of the summer, you know, the antler develops. And by about the time, this is in July. So in July in the story, that's when the antler's almost at full growth, and they're covered with, so they've got some bony structure, but they're still covered with this this velvet material. Mm. Now, the interesting thing is that in the Far East, deer antlers and elk antlers are valued as some kind of magic potion. Mm-hmm. And so I base this story on this idea that there's some poachers in the park. And they're actually, as you get into the story, you find it's not just here in Estes Park, but it's a big business. And they're poaching elk in some of the national parks, Yellowstone and Glacier, some places like that. And and transporting these antlers clandestinely into Canada, where they ultimately go to the Far East and Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a truth that didn't happen here in Estes Park, and it happened on a far smaller scale in Glacier and Yellowstone during the same time period.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted that came out, 1982 gave me a time before cell phones and some technology. So it's, you know, so you know, we don't have to worry about like that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We're going to take another very short break, Kevin. And when we come back, we want to talk about some of the interesting characters in this book. So we're going to step away for a moment. And we're delighted to welcome Blue Cottage Agency and also Toast Them, Clicks by Madison, sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer. If you are a writer, find out what they can do for you. And we're going to be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com. And we're back.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Kevin Wolf, and we're talking about Trail Ridge. Exciting book, We're in the Mountains. You know, there's murder and mayhem in here. This isn't just a mystery. And we got natural disasters. We got car chases. We got car wrecks.
Yes, yes, we do. Do you want to just...
strange things we find.
So let's talk a little bit about characters. Kevin, we're just going to throw out a name and then... if you would like to say something, great. If you don't want to talk about that person because for whatever reason, you can say pass and we'll throw out a different name. But we want to start with Willow, I think, don't we?
Willow, an interesting lady.
Willow.
Yeah, in the section.
Tell us about Willow.
Yeah, in the section that I read, Hogan is fishing beside the stream and this woman gets out of her car and spots the body in the stream. You learn in the next few pages, her name is Willow Stanford, at least that's what she tells him her name is. And as the coroner and the park rangers come to take the body out, we get introduced to her. Now, while Hogan is very much at home in the outdoors and the park, Willow is out of her element. She's driving a Corvette, and she's kind of standoffish and answering questions. And she invites... they take the body away, she invites Hogan to do she said she'll give him a ride to where he parked his pickup truck. And they get to know each other a little bit. And she says that she's there visiting someone in Estes Park and asked Hogan about some things. But we never really know who Willow is through the book, because we find out that Willow might not be her full name and that she's got a past that is, she's a difficult character to describe, but you'll love her on one page and you'll scratch your head on the next.
You know, I kind of thought about that, you know, and how would I describe her? And I said, you know, Willow's probably one of these ladies that every man should date once, but never, ever marry.
You know, and I think Hogan, because he's empty, he sees the chance to help. You know, hey, guy, pretty girl, everybody wants to be the knight on the white horse. But he's very cautious about the relationship. And, and they get thrown together in some tough circumstances. Yeah.
So that red Corvette. Yeah, tell us about in 1982, a red Corvette.
She's driving this red Corvette, and when Hogan gets in it in his dirty fishing clothes, he immediately notices the dashboard and the smell of a new car, and the things a guy would notice in this car, and it's the car she's rented when she got to Colorado, and. And it just turns out that in 1982, those Corvettes were a little bit underpowered from what they had been. And that kind of plays a factor in when we get to a car chase over Trail Ridge Road, a midnight car chase. That is, they try to flee the bad guys. They're in this Corvette that they don't have quite the advantage that they should.
Who's the next one we want to ask about?
The next one. You know, how about Hayden's Tate.
Okay, the body that is discovered in the stream is a man. His name is Paxton Tate, and we look and when his wife is named Cadence, and she's and when we first meet her, she's downtown Estes Park. Says nothing, and she meets with Willow, and we find out that I think I can say this much, that she's actually Willow's estranged mother. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had much contact in the past, and now that they're together, a series of events start to fall together, and we learn that Cadence is the man in the stream is named Paxton Tate. He's a politician from Iowa. They were in Estes Park for a vacation before some things are going to happen, and but. Cadence has gone through a series of men using them for what the, what she needs. And
not to marry.
She had a lot of plastic surgeries, I remember.
Not to marry. And then you give us some really bad. So Usher, tell us about, oh my goodness. And was he fun to write? Tell us about what Usher and how did he make himself known to you?
Usher's. As we meet the elk poachers, Usher is one of the guys that's it's killing the elk. He's very proud of himself. He thinks he's a ladies' man. He thinks he's got a chance with Willow, this pretty girl, she uses him. He tries to use her, and at one point in the story, they really come head on with each other. There's a hanging around Estes Park. There's a bunch of characters up here guys that, you know, come to the park to fly fish, guide fishermen. They might be, working in any kind of construction, and they're in and out of town. And, Usher parties hard and thinks he's God's gift to women, but he's really in it for himself. Mm-hmm. And he will not,
was he fun to write?
Oh yeah. Especially when Hogan gets over on him.
Well, you know, getting back to Hogan, Guy Hogan, he's kind of, to me, a little bit of a strong, silent type, a little bit of John Wayne putting this guy. And, He's actually really a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a decent man, and as they get into some of the stuff that happens in the story, he has some moral questions. What should he, will he be, will he do this for what could happen? Mm-hmm. Without giving away the story, at the end of the story, we see him have this. We see how decent he really is.
Mm-hmm. And he physically has surprising stamina. I mean, there are some very physical, almost life-threatening physical scenes that happen where you really hope he's going to make it. He's going to make it out. Yeah. And
he's not a real young guy either.
No,
I don't go into a whole lot about what he did before. But obviously, he's semi-retired, doing a few things to make a few bits of money. He really hasn't found his place. He's got friends in Estes Park, but he kind of likes to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we talk a lot about Jenny. Now, Jenny is his wife, but she's not with us. So.
Yes, but she's a character.
Like I say, that while she's not... You never meet Jenny physically in the story. You learn a lot about her from Hogan's memories.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have Click Batterson.
Yeah, Click Batterson is a law enforcement ranger in the park, and we find out that early in the story that he and Hogan have become friends because Batterson's seen him fishing in the park, even arranged for him to be a fishing guide. They're both veterans of the Korean War. And Click gets his name because he was a artillery spotter. And, you know, they would give the kilometers, you know, so he would, you know, as he was spotting that the artillery fire coming in, he would, you know, direct him 5 clicks to the left, 5 clicks to the right.
Oh.
I go by that pretty quick, but he's a tough old guy, but he's got something to hide too.
You know, you cover, there's a lot of agencies involved in here, and I thought it was very interesting because now the way it's, we didn't ask about what Whitey called American Horse, but she's kind of more politician than I think she is a park ranger. I guess she's ahead of the Rangers. We got the Rangers. We got the National. We got Fish and Game.
Phoebe American Horse is the new to. She's got a new position at Rocky Mountain National Park, and she's the law enforcement ranger for the whole park. So she, when the bad stuff happens, she comes into it. Now, because we've got these poaching things going on, as the Park Service, you know, is notoriously always undermanned, they have to ask for help. And so they bring in the local Colorado game warden. And there's another character that I really like. His name is Dalton Cummings. He's an older fellow. He's seen it all, but he knows what he's doing. He's a little skeptical of the new people and the bureaucracy of government. But, you know. Yeah. He loves the outdoors. And, you know, so he's Colorado Division of Wildlife is in to help on the job. U.S. Bureau of Fish and Game would be, you know, was asked to assist in this because they know the they've been involved in the poaching in the other places. Mm-hmm. And let's see. And in the, and jurisdiction, when they find the body in the park, you know, if it was the jurisdiction could be a murder in the park is actually a federal crime. So FBI would be involved in investigating.
I was going to say, as a layman looking at that, I thought I wouldn't have a clue who's in charge of what here. So I kind
of. And that kind of causes some some problems at different times. especially for Hogan, who do I listen to here? Yeah.
Do you want to? You have a favorite question that you like to ask?
Yeah, we talk about these fine characters, and some of them are really kind of special to some degree. But do any time do they ever surprise you?
Not huge surprises. You know, everything that I've written so far, I knew where I wanted to start the book, almost to this exact scene where it would start, and I knew where I was going to go with it. And as I built in the built in the story and what happens, you know, you know, I kind of discover characters. Usher was a character that I had to have a bad guy, and and so you know, I would, building him, I wouldn't say it was a surprise, but it was certainly fun.
Let's see, along that same line, I have to just think, so this is a mystery, of course. So as a mystery writer, what are some of the things that you have to be sure are included in the story so that it's a great mystery?
Well,
how do you lay out the clues and such?
Yeah, I mean, most of it, my writing process is I try to get the story as I see it, you know, from page one to the end down. Then I go back and I kind of dissect it. And I dissect the story against, you know, just a basic arc of a story. Where does it start? What is the incident that gets the story going? How do we introduce characters and build the things, you know, make it interesting? And sometimes, you know, it's not uncommon for me, even when I'm writing, go, I got to tip the hand, my hand earlier that this could happen. And so something, a lot of times I'm working on the sequel, or I don't know whether it's a sequel. It's Guy Hogan in another situation. And right now I'm doing that. I decided I had to add some things. So I'm going back into the story adding some elements.
You belong to a number of writing groups. Why would you tell an author, you know, it's really good to be part of a writing group?
When I started writing, I visualized a writer sitting in his attic with a typewriter, knocking out pages, sliding them under the door, and fan letters and checks from New York sliding back.
Great image. How it worked, Kevin?
It never worked for me. I joined early with this Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, met people, went to workshops, got into critique groups, formed some great friendships with people that still help me, still in contact today. I'm the vice president of the organization currently. And then I was introduced through Ann Hillerman and the Hillerman Award to Western Writers. And that was, the first conference I was in, I go, hey, I know these guys. I didn't know a name, but they were friends right away. And then Mystery Writers of America has a nice local chapter here that I do some things with. But I think, you meet other people that are going through the same struggle. You can learn from each other. You can, and then it's good to see friends succeed too.
Yes, yes. So where can people find you? I'm looking at time, Kevin. I can't believe it just blowing it always does.
This has been great. This has been a lot of fun.
I'm so glad.
If a bookstore doesn't have it, it's certainly available to them, and it's available online. The big monster we know has got it, both as a paperback,
the big monster,
and it's available as an ebook.
And do you have a website, or if somebody wanted to contact you, how would they do that?
My website is KevinWolfStoryteller.com.
And
Wolf is just like the animal, no E.
W-O-L-F. That's a good point.
Storyteller.com.
Jim has a couple of quotes.
We have a couple of quotes, and this is Willow.
Willow.
Willow's tears cut pathways through the dirt Hogan had smeared on her face. She folded her arms under her chin and peered up the hill. The voice came again, the woman's voice. She knew it, like she knew the beats of her own heart and the breath in her lungs. It was her mother's voice, and the man in the cowboy hat, her uncle. Her mother and her uncle, both of them, they were hunting her on this mountain.
You want to read this book. What else you got?
Yeah, and then we got quickly, we just got some fun quotes here. This is from Sir Edmund Hillary, the famous mountain climber. It's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves. Yeah. And for ex-president George W. Bush, we climbed the Money Mountain. I see the valley below, and it's a valley of peace. And lastly, from the naturalist John Muir, the mountains are calling, and I must go.
Don't forget, you can hear tonight's episode number 100 on all of our interviews on your favorite podcast platforms like Spotify and Amazon Music and LATalkRadio.com. Never miss a show. You can follow us on Podbean. Next week, we kick off September, a month that we're calling Mayhem, Memoir, Murder, and Medallion Winner for fun. And we have two guests next Thursday joining us, and they were with us for episode number one. C. Courtney Joyner is back.
And Henry Park.
C. Courtney Joyner contributes stories to anthologies of Westerns and horror writing. And this is another book, Nemo Rising, of his. We'll be talking about a movie he wrote the screenplay for that is just now out, a horror film. We're watching it tomorrow night, called Quadrant. And we're also going to be talking about a brand new book that he contributed to that releases October 1st, Videotapes from Hell, a visual history of cult, collectible, and crazy video covers. And with him will be his good friend and our good friend, Henry Park, who, of course, is the film editor for True West magazine and is always with us the first Thursday of every month. And he and Henry and Courtney do a lot of work together with kind of, they're the experts on a lot of videos, the talking heads, so to speak, film experts. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I know we are now a moment out of time, Kevin.
We got a show and tell here.
Yes, Kevin, raise your glass, Jim. Kevin, thank you for joining us for
our 100th
show. We have cake and champagne, and we'll meet you in the studio, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Hey, I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
We'll see you again next week.
And as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading. Bye-bye.